1st, it's time for a monthly check-in on the world of science. Honeybees are great at building hives, pollinating plants, and making honey. Turns out they might also be good at math. We'll talk about how scientists made the discovery and how it helps us understand the buzzy critters a little bit more. Plus, we'll take a broad look at space, from intergalactic pulsars to a massive ice corridor on a distant moon in our solar system. Bill Andrews is a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Well, you guys did this this big issue called Everything Worth Knowing. How do you pick stories with a lot of weight like that?
Well, we have a meeting early in the year where we all just throw out everything that seems like it'd be fun to do. You know, we come up with like 50 stories at the end of that, and then the bosses actually have to whittle it down and figure out, well, these are possible, these are too silly, these maybe next year, and then we end up with about 15, 16 stories that, from, you know, the periodic table to flight to hurricanes, just all kinds of stuff, and we just try to lay out all the cool stuff about them, everything you need to know to be able to talk, you know, somewhat knowledgeably about any of these things at a cocktail party or out with friends.
Well, it comes up for me all the time at the cocktail parties I don't go to. People are always bringing up pulsars, and that's one of the things you tackled here. Pulsars are the weirdest thing. What are they?
Well, they're a kind of a star. That's the first thing, just to get people's mind in the right place. They're a specific kind of a star that is called a neutron star, which is what's left over after certain stars blow up. At the end of their lives, these stars go supernova, and they just kind of shred themselves, and what's left is the core. Core is left behind. That is a neutron star that's made out of just neutrons. No protons, no electrons, just neutrons. So that's the type of star that exists out there. And sometimes these neutron stars can have these beams of radiation that shoot out along their magnetic poles. And so, okay, that's got it so far, the type of neutron star with these beams shooting out. Sometimes stars like that are spinning around, and that means that if the geometry works out just right, from here on Earth, we see a little blip in the sky. And each of those little blips or pulses is when such an object, a pulsar, one of those neutron stars, ends up pointing one of those jets right at us. So pulsars are just the name for the kinds of neutron stars with these things shooting off their edges that we can see from Earth. When things line up and we see it kind of like a lighthouse, you see it blinking on and off in the distance whenever the light ends up pointing toward you.
Now, flipping things around, for the first astronomer who started seeing these regular blips happening every, you know, whatever portion of a second, this is a big mystery, right?
Yeah, they had no idea what these things could be. It was a few decades ago, so it was not, you know, not like hundreds of years ago. It was through radio telescopes that they saw them, and they had no idea. At first, they called them scintillating sources, which is a kind of a nice poetic term. The other fun thing is that at first, the researcher who discovered them, the name of Jocelyn Bell Burnell, she wanted to name them LGM, for Little Green Men. Because, you know, if it's space, it might be anything. Why not aliens? It turned out it's not aliens, but it's fun to think about.
And to make a pulsar now, it's kind of like a Goldilocks scenario. The star can't be too small. Can't be too big. It has to be just right if it's going to collapse to be a neutron star, right?
Right. It has to be at least 8 times as massive as the sun, our sun. So that's always kind of the benchmark for other stars. We're very egotistical that way. We measure things in terms of our local star.
Fair.
It has to be at least 8 times as massive, but less than 30 times as massive. So if it's in that area, then it'll blow up in the right way, it'll produce a neutron star, and then it still has to point toward us whenever its geometry has to be just right. So it's not that easy for a star to become a pulsar in our sky, but we still have tons of examples of it in the history and the literature, and we're still finding new ones whenever new radio telescopes go up, whenever new surveys can see deeper and further. There are pulsars just all over the universe.
Talking to Bill Andrews from Discover Magazine, looking at some of the most intriguing stories in the world of science. Okay, closer to home, Bill, but in some ways just as weird. Honeybees are actually able to do some forms of math?
Yeah, that's neat to think about, right?
Yeah.
I know people who don't like to do math, and yet honeybees are pretty good at it, it turns out. We recently wrote about on our website a recent study that showed that honeybees are better at math than even we thought. And it's funny because it's kind of a series now. About a year ago, we started writing stories about honeybees and math, showing that not only can they recognize the concept of numbers and figure out the concept of zero on their own, which is kind of a big deal. That was about a year ago. About 6 months ago, another story came out saying that they could do math. They could do basic arithmetic. They could add numbers and subtract. That's cool. Okay. And now, just a few weeks ago, a third story has come out saying that bees, in addition to all that stuff, they can even recognize the concept of numerals, of a symbol standing in for a quantity. So instead of having to show them two things, two squares or two kernels of corn or whatever, you can just show them a symbol, and they will grasp that that symbol means two things. And vice versa, you could teach honeybees that two things can be conveyed as a symbol. They actually taught them for two and three, so a variety of numerals. The one thing that the bees couldn't learn, they couldn't go from one to the other. If you taught them that a symbol is equals this quantity of stuff, they couldn't then turn around and tell you that this quantity of stuff is represented by the symbol. Had to be two separate teaching regimens. So that's apparently where the limits of honeybee math lie.
And the way they figured this out, it's a bit tricky, but it involves running bees back and forth through mazes with yummy sucrose in one and yucky quinine in the other direction?
That's right. It's kind of a Y-shaped maze of three boxes, and then you test them. You show them the one thing that you're trying to get them to learn, and then the two forking paths of the Y, one is the right answer with the yummy sucrose, and the other is the unfortunately wrong answer, and they have to choke back the bitter quinine. But as the researchers were quick to point out, even if a bee made an incorrect choice and started to imbibe the quinine, it was allowed to collect sucrose to maintain motivation. So, you know, the bees are still doing okay. Even if they got it wrong, they still got the yummy reward, and they could still keep going. They weren't going to get angry with the researchers and fly away in a huff.
You know, one of those angry bees. One more story I want to check out, Bill. Back out into space, but we'll stay in the solar system this time. Titan, the moon of Saturn. Seems like a lot of people are interested in this in the science fiction world. Kind of a cool thing. There's this really weird feature we're starting to discover. What are we learning about Saturn's moon, Titan?
Yeah, it is. It's a fantastically weird moon that is kind of similar to Earth because it has a weather cycle, only it's so much colder out there that the rocks on Titan are ice, water ice, and the liquids that can rain down and that can form kind of oceans and rivers are liquid hydrocarbons, like methane. And so it's a similar ecosystem but different. And a recent study using a new type of analysis of data that the Cassini spacecraft captured of Titan years ago showed that there's this huge corridor of ice, just exposed bedrock ice on Titan, water ice, that stretches for thousands of miles, almost halfway around the whole moon. And it was a total shock. Nobody knows why it's there. Nobody knows what caused it. There was no reason to think it should be there. It was just when they were able to get this new imaging system going that they saw this new weird thing there kind of across the tropics. And they're like, huh, well, that's interesting.
4,000-mile ice corridor is what I saw. So you drive coast to coast in the United States, you still got another, what, 1,500 miles to go to get the length of this thing.
Yeah, just about. Yeah, it's a crazy huge feature on this moon that we thought we were starting to get to know. It's way out there. It's hard to study, but we've got a lot of data on it. But this just goes to show there's always more data out there.
And this is in part from NASA's Cassini spacecraft, which spent a lot of time surveying Saturn itself and its moons. Are we still going to keep getting a treasure trove of stuff from Cassini?
Yeah, even though the probe itself actually went defunct a year or two ago, they threw it into Saturn's atmosphere so that it wouldn't contaminate any of the moons. It collected so much data over the years that we're still going through it. The scientists are still able to get to data that they haven't gone through before to analyze. So it's likely that we're going to keep finding discoveries like this just kind of hidden away in our future.
And before we wrap up, Bill, we've got this 4,000-mile-long ice shelf on Titan. Are we starting to see theories about what the heck it's doing there, or is that still down the road?
There's always theories, right? Whenever scientists find anything, there's no shortage of wacky ideas of what it might be, I think. And so one of them for this one is that it could be tied to a past, what the team called a major cryovolcanic event. And so cryovolcanism is, I guess as the word implies, kind of an icy volcano system that some moons in the solar system seem to have. Maybe Titan had it at one point. And so there's evidence that thousands of years ago there was some kind of major cryovolcanic event that shifted the very landscape of Titan. And so maybe this is a result of something like that. Although, again, we don't really know. It could be that, but maybe it's something else.
Could be the solar system's biggest curling court. Bill, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No problem. My pleasure.
That's Bill Andrews, Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. He joins today to talk about news out of the world of science.